Hello, you're listening to Cambridge 105 Radio. I'm Daniel Baker.
And I'm Emeka Johnson-Igbo, also known as Max.
And today we're bringing you a sports special which looks at the sporting summer across the city and South Cambridgeshire. Coming up, we find out how a local team has become sustainable during the so-called rugby crisis in England.
We also meet the Cambridgeshire Cats American football team, who have set their sights on being one of the best around.
We'll meet a powerlifter who has won it all. We've got plenty for you in the next hour. Cambridge Rugby Club has revealed how it's managed to become sustainable during a time of economic instability in the English game. Canterburgian IUFC, who are better known as the Cantabs, have adopted a back-to-basics plan which they say will keep the club running for years to come. In recent seasons, several professional sides have faced and suffered financial ruin, with the latest being ex-championship side Jersey Reds, who were liquidated last year. But what's in the Cantabs' master plan, which has helped them run without debts? I've been chatting to Director of Rugby and Head Coach Glenn Remnant and First Team Captain and President Tom Bailey.
We've got very, very good player numbers and the player registration's growing, which has popped up a little red flag with the RFU, which is really good because we're kind of bucking all the trends at the moment. But we're doing some really lovely things, just taking rugby back to what it was before, Daniel. Very simple foundations of people, families coming down and enjoying themselves, having a good day out and kind of just, resetting, recalibrating.
This is really just that sort of coming together of similar interests, people wanting to get together, play rugby, but more than that, you know, make friends, add back to the community, have a bit of a social, you know, expanding the horizons a bit in terms of friendship groups. We're just, as Glenn says, we're sort of taking it back to the basics in terms of all the external stuff of rugby.
Especially nowadays, Daniel, with COVID and what's happened after COVID, people have kind of become recluses and getting out of the house and getting out and doing things is quite hard to do. So the club in its whole state is just a great place for people just to come out and get some fresh air. And we've got a lot of people within the club that just, they come down and they're not available every week, but they come down, they train pretty much every day just to clear their heads, get a bit of fresh air and just recalibrate. It's been an interesting few years and rugby and the infrastructure around rugby just supercharges people's lives.
Obviously, you've talked about why you want to sort of make it the way it is really. And do you think doing it the way you're doing it will make the club sustainable?
100%. Look at what's happening at the moment, Daniel. Rugby is dying. You know, look at the number of clubs around where we are that are dying. The numbers are shrinking and we're doing the opposite. And again, we need to go back to just what is rugby about? Why do we play rugby? What does it offer and what has it offered people before? And just supercharge it. Make it better. Be lateral thinking. Be creative. Don't just stay in the same old rut that so many clubs have done. And those clubs are just dying because they're not being creative. They're not trying to create an environment for everyone to be part of.
And it's even just like the small things that make all the difference. So we train Tuesdays and Thursdays. And after every Thursday training, we sit down and one of the lads in the club has cooked an entire meal for everyone, get a few beers from behind the bar. Everyone sits down, they chat. They feel much more inclusive to the club. That's the main thing. Like, people want to be part of something. If they're going to be spending their time committing to something, they want to be in a friendly environment where they're supported, where they can play the rugby that they want to. And whether that's, you know, as Glenn's previously mentioned, no, guys with work can't always play every weekend, to the guys that are diehards wanting to come out every single Saturday. You know, that's something that we cater to and, you know, we get a good response from that. Like you mentioned the financial side as well, with things like the Cantab Beer Festival, with the popularity of people coming to the club to watch matches, to play matches, the club's really healthy and we are very sustainable at the moment, let's say.
Our financial position is very strong, very, very strong. You know, we, unlike a lot of rugby clubs in the community at the moment, we don't have debt. You look at it, the Worcesters, the London Irishes, the Wasps, you know, they've gone, Jersey Reds have gone. So that's us four teams closer to the Premiership. It's about what you want your club to be. And myself, Tom, and a lot of the other people involved in the club want it to be a place for people to come and be part of. One thing that you've got to be aware of is that we still a very competitive club. Even though it's social, still very competitive. So the personnel that we have that play week in, week out, they train to win. They don't train to turn up and have a few beers afterwards. They train to turn up to be better every week and to win. And to win again and to win again. And that's the lovely thing. We've got that mix between a social club, but also that edge. You know, the stuff that's going on pre-season and the little competitions within the team, you know, Kieran's out there trying to smash bench press records and all the boys are right into it. And, you know, the boys are rowing too, and even some of them trying to bring their golf handicaps down. So it's all really good in a very good, healthy, competitive way.
For people who haven't really been following the club recently, just talk us through the story of last season, really, how you fared and what are you hoping to achieve this time around?
We had an absolute running start, playing very well. We were winning good games. We were winning well as well. It wasn't just like we were scraping victories. We were beating teams by a good 20, 30 points. And I reckoned after the first 9 games, our first team was second and our second team was first in their respective leagues. So as a club, we were in a very strong position. The third team, we were more than happy for them just to be sort of getting out and playing games, but the first and second were looking very strong. Fortunately, myself included in the mix, we had a plethora of injuries. Like our entire starting front row, myself and our two other props were injured at the same time for a long period of time as well. We'd lost 10s, we'd lost 9s, back rows. We were down a lot of people. So we sort of ended up the season mid-table for the first team, having won half, lost half. And I think the second team was a similar position. I think they won 11, lost 8, drew 1 or something like that. But both teams ended up being mid-table. So we had a really great running start, but I think it's fair to say that we were somewhat disappointed by the end. And I think that's what's really driving into the pre-season and next season of what we're going to try and achieve.
The second team, we want to get promoted, and the second team want to be promoted. So that's an internal drive from the players, which is absolutely awesome. In reflection, that the guys in the second team have come up to Tom and myself and others and said, you know, we shouldn't have been here. We should have been at the top. So that's good, that competitive edge that we have. And in the first team, we know as first and second teams, because it is 3 teams, 1 club, we all want the first team to be at a higher level. And again, we want to be in the mixer at the end of the year. So, you know, work hard pre-season. The boys are working hard now. And then we get together and we supercharge the culture that we have, which is paramount. And then that will take us to where we want to do. And we want more players. There's a lot of boys around that are not getting rugby at the moment at other places and want to aspire to go higher. We, a team, we have that ambition. We want to go higher. We're in a very, very good financial position. Nigel, the treasurer, is just an amazing man, absolutely amazing, investing back into the players, which a lot of clubs don't do. So that infrastructure is better. It's awesome. It's a great place to be, Daniel. You need to come down more. Do you play rugby, Daniel?
I don't know. I think I played it at school once, but I'm not very quick and I'm not very good on the ball. So I think that's but I'm absolutely very open to ideas. I'm very happy to put the boots on at some point if you ever did want me to. So I'm sure I've done. It might tempt me.
We have a lot of guys that have never played before that have come down. Really lovely man. He's finished university now. Gus is heading down south, and he has just been absolutely outstanding. You know, he got his first team cap this year. Lad never played rugby before. First training, left training with a blood nose, and just it was outstanding. But he just kept chipping away, and he got his first team cap this year. And you know, when he played, Daniel, he didn't look out of place at all. He understood what we're doing. Our structures are fairly simple, and he just, you know, that was amazing. Ben Newman, another guy. We've been playing for a handful of years now, turned up, never played before. Again, Daniel, if you come down and watched and I asked you to tell me who had only been playing rugby for 3-odd years, you would be hard-pressed to pick him. You'd probably pick me before him. So that's the kind of club we are, you know. We haven't a junior structure at the moment. Anyone that comes in, we'll teach you to play rugby. We'll teach you. We'll show you how to be a rugby player. And the lovely thing, Daniel, that we have is that the senior players, you know, the guys like the James Haywoods of the team, Josh Crush, Ollie Townsend, those boys, arm around, this is how we do it. And they'll have people in there dropping the ball and they'll be training with them and they're just teaching them and educating them and making them better to the point where they're not necessarily knocking on the door, but they're there or thereabouts. Everyone is part of the club. Everyone kind of does stuff for the club, and that's nice.
I'll hear more from both Glenn and Tom shortly.
Friday evenings on Cambridge 105 Radio, Johnny Five is on the decks with guest DJs from across the region. They're mixing drum and bass, garage, house and dubstep. The Urban Bassline Show, Friday at 7 on Cambridge 105 Radio.
105 Radio.
Now, a short time ago, Cantab's head coach Glenn Remnant and captain and president Tom Bailey revealed more about the club's sustainability model. Let's rejoin Glenn and Tom and begin part two with Tom. We start by talking about the long-term goals of the club.
For me, Daniel, I would like us to be an amateur club in the National Leagues. And that is achievable. There are a lot of people out there that play rugby that have very good careers. And do they want to go and play for a club where they get 20 quid a game and they're expected to smash themselves up week in, week out? We have a really eclectic group of men. Some are amazing, absolutely amazing, very, very intellectual. And they test me as a coach and they test our infrastructures. And that is hugely stimulating. You know, I was just away for a two-day course with the RFU and we were talking about the demographic that I have, and the people that were there were just blown away by the kind of quality of person that we have there. And that's amazing. That's why I coach, to be tested in that way. And for us, the sky's the limit, isn't it? Let's drive forward. Let's go somewhere. Let's not sit there and be in the same old rut. Let's move forward.
I think the key for 5-10 years is that it's just about longevity and just growth. We always want to be bigger. We want to be starting to push for that fourth team in 5 or 10 years' time. We want to be in the best leagues we can be in as an amateur club. We've always said that we're never going to try and pay players. Paying players can muddy the waters. People then start turning around saying, oh, I'm better than him, but he's getting paid 50 quid a match and I'm not getting paid anything. This is rubbish. And as soon as it becomes a money thing, that's when people lose loyalty, people start moving around more. Plus, it helps the club financially in the long term as well. But that's what we want. We want the club to be around. We want to have a fourth team. We want to be in the best leagues our teams can get. And we want to just be known within the community, in the bigger part of the community. Things like the beer festival, you know, we want to go from it having 300-400 guests to, you know, pushing like 1,000 people there to like know who know about the club. And from there, you know, it's just all these small things that people within the club, both on the pitch and in the back room, do that will just push us to those goals.
One of our goals, Daniel, is to create a professional environment, which we are doing, a professional environment for amateur people. That's the goal. You look at, Tom was talking about people being paid. There's situations within rugby where when the money gets pulled out, players leave. And that's happened at a lot of clubs. And for us, we want people to go out and lay their bodies on the line week in, week out. And we want to create an environment and a culture that accommodates that, that looks after them, that allows them to go and express themselves in the best possible way. There's a couple of other people that, if it's possible, I'd like to thank that have been, you know, been hugely helpful. Again, with our sponsors out there, they've been absolutely insane. And we will get on and we will mention the new sponsors for the year coming up. Again, we can do a regular thing. I'd love it. But one person that's very, very special, Sarah at F45, just absolutely insane, that lady. Just, again, of a similar ilk to myself, feeding into the club. We've got the guys training at F45 all the time. The trainers down there really put them through their paces. So if anyone wants to be tested, they can jump down there. And I'm sure Sarah and the team down there will take care of them.
And we wish the team well for the upcoming season. Now, we've got loads more coming up. Stay tuned.
Get up.
Listening to Cambridge 105 Radio, and this is Cambridge Sports Special. A powerlifter who recently became a world champion says she has no intention of retiring from the sport just yet. Siobhan Taylor from Haverhill initially took up the sport to help her recover from a back injury that was threatening to end her nursing career. The 46-year-old works in the intensive care unit at Addenbrookes, but took some time out to compete in the World Championships in Texas, where she won gold. I spoke to Siobhan, who also trains in Cambridge, and began by asking her what it means to be a world champion.
I am indeed. It's a dream, quite literally. I never even imagined. So it's a nice title to have.
And not the only one you got as well while you're in Texas in the powerlifting championships. You're now a new British record holder, a new Commonwealth record holder, and the best female lifter in the world too.
Best M1 female lifter, yes, which is the age category. But yeah, you know, these titles, it's quite nice to roll them off your tongue these days.
Excellent stuff. So with the world championships in particular, We spoke before the championships took place, and we were talking about the things you've won, Europeans, Commonwealths, British, etc., etc. And you had a description for the World Championships, which I believe was the final boss, if I remember correctly.
That is correct. So, very much like any kind of computer game, the final boss is always the big one that is scary and takes the most energy. I think I've slayed the final boss. I think I did a good job and walked away with absolutely everything I had on my little dream list of things to achieve. So yeah, came, saw, conquered, crushed.
And in terms of the preparations then for the actual competition, what was that like building up to the competition, and how are you sort of feeling going into it?
Now that I'm the other side of it, I can look back on just how tough it had been on some days, because not every session goes well. You do end up with some sort of rubbishy training sessions, but I'm really fortunate that I'm very well supported both at the Wimbledon Lifting Club and here with the club that I lift in within Cambridge, that I have people that just kept me going. On those days, it would have been so much easier just to walk away, but on those days I had people literally just cheering me on in the rack just to keep going and keep making those training gains, and it's paid off. So it was tough, but it's been definitely worth it.
And how do you prepare for something as big as the World Championships? Because obviously you've got the competition day itself, and plus all the kind of the build-up and the training days in the build-up to it. Talk us through how you prepared for it and what your training regime was like.
So I have a coach called Rhett Milton Barnes, who I train with in Cambridge, who sets my programming. So I train three times a week, and I've been really consistent with that over the last few years, despite the fact that I work as an ITU nurse and my rota can be a bit fluctuant. But he's been really good at adapting a training program that I can do, whether I'm physically in the gym. I'm lucky I have some kit at home, so I can do some training at home. And so the preparation has just been remain consistent. It's not motivation. Everybody thinks, oh God, you're so motivated. It's not. It's about just getting up and doing it, even though you didn't want to do it. And like I said, having people in the gym that would be there to just keep me moving forward has been the key to me being able to make the gains to perform on the day.
And take me back to the day that you actually performed in the championships as well. What was going through your mind before the competition?
I honestly, I think as I'm thinking about it, beforehand, there is always a lot of nerve to me pre-comp. This time though, because I'd coached for the team earlier in the week, I was really familiar with the environment. So I felt a lot calmer, although I was still really nervous about lifting. And as an equipped lifter, there is always a risk that you'll do what we call bombing out, which means that you don't get any of your lifts. And so prior to that, that was kind of what was causing my anxiety. As soon as the warm-up starts, though, and both of my handlers and the head coach, Martin, will tell you, as soon as you put a bar in my hand, all of that kind of nervous energy settles because I have somewhere to put it. And then it's just about focusing on getting the performance done. And they are really good at handling me. They do just let me lift in my and exist in my little bubble. And so that's how I got through the day. But yeah, the nerves were definitely big before I started.
And when you found out you'd won the competition, talk me through the emotions you went through and just how you felt knowing that you'd done it.
I actually watched the very last lift. It was a lady from Finland take the last lift, which she failed. And because she failed that, I won. When I came off my last lift, so you get three opportunities to, you know, do your best lift. And I came off my last lift, I actually didn't know what I'd lifted. I had no idea what was on the bar. And so I came off and asked my handler, like, what was on the bar? And they were like, 185. And I was like, shocked Pikachu face. And then I was like, oh, where have I placed? And I had literally no idea where I was at that position or what state the competition was in, because I was in such my lifting little bubble. And my handler said, oh, that's the last lift. And if she fails, you're world champion. There may have been some rich words, but we sat and watched the very last lift. And as I saw her fail it, all of this emotion just poured out of me. If you want to watch the live stream, there's lots of screaming, but it's joyful screaming of realizing that the work had paid off. The sacrifice had been all for, you know, a good reason. I'd done what I came to do for the team, which was to get the points. And then I'd achieved everything else. I'd got the title. I'd broken the British record. It was just hugely overwhelming, but it was a fabulous experience.
Becoming a world champion was in some ways the missing piece of the puzzle, because your journey with powerlifting started several years ago. For people who haven't read your story or don't know your story, talk us through how you came to take it up and how you've now managed to become a world champion years down the line.
So I didn't actually start lifting till I was 38, I think. And I was already going to the gym. So I was already quite, you know, what people would term a gym bunny, doing sort of 6 to 8 hours of cardio a week, doing cycle classes and stuff. And I hurt my back at work. So like I said, I work as an ITU nurse, and nursing is a physically tough career, and bad backs end careers. And I was waiting for the physiotherapist and the GP and everything else. And because I work with such a great team, I asked one of the physios I worked for if there was anybody they could recommend I could go and see privately to kind of speed up my back injury recovery. And she said, actually, if you go to the gym to get somebody to teach you how to lift, build your core, you'll never have a problem with your back again. And that's kind of how I ended up swapping some of my cardio sessions for lifting sessions. And so that's how I kind of fell into lifting. And I'm always this kind of, I'll give anything a go once kind of person. And got invited to a powerlifting competition just for fun, just to see what I could do. Qualified for nationals out of that little regional competition. And it's just grown from there. And I never thought something that would start out as an injury that became a hobby has allowed me to travel the world and just meet amazing people and have all of these wonderful, eclectic experiences. And it goes to show you can teach an old dog new tricks.
That's a-
You're listening to Cambridge 105 Radio, and this is Cambridge Sports Special.
The Cambridgeshire Cats football team have set their sights on being one of the best American football teams in the country. Andy White Oak's side were promoted to the Premier Division only 2 years ago in 2022 and consolidated in their first year back in the top flight. And this season, they've built a squad which is a mix of old and new faces. Daniel went to meet them.
My name is Andy Whiteoak. I'm the head coach of the Cambridge Cats. Last season, we came up from Division 1 to the top level in British American football, which is the BAFA Premiership. We hoped to survive. That was our goal for last year, was to win enough games to be able to get a second year in the Prem. And we did that. We ended up 3-7, which, you know, was great. But we knew we had a lot of work to do. We had to do a lot of building. We had to recruit a lot. We had to really evolve how we're doing things and improve our coaching standards as well.
And talk to me about the recruitment process then. How's that gone over the last few months?
Oh, well, for this year, we basically put a team together of people who are very well connected across the sport in this country and said, find us the best players. And we've recruited very well from other teams. We always recruit well from universities, and this year we've been very lucky that we've had an influx of new talent from the American bases nearby as well, which is really helpful because a lot of them have played the sport before to a very decent level, and they are they come in ready to play. So.
Are there some veterans in that team as well? Is it mostly a new team, a new young team? Talk me through the kind of makeup of that team.
The makeup of the team is very, very broad. I mean, we have some people who've been with the Cats now for well over a decade. Some people who've been a part of this club since the junior level. These are guys who've been with the club since they were 15, 16. We have a lot of guys who are in the university system, so these are guys who are at Norwich or ARU or close by universities who want to play through the summer and are local. And we have some guys who are just rugby guys who fancied a new challenge. So we've got a very broad mix in the team of kind of experienced people and people who are brand new to the sport who've never touched a football before.
In terms of the club itself as well, bearing in mind we've had a pandemic and bearing in mind there was a time where we couldn't watch sports, even outside, it was always a bit tricky with the rules of six and the maximums of 30s and all the sort of things that came with it really. How has the club recovered sort of post-COVID in terms of the people watching it and the people getting involved in it?
It was definitely a challenge. We had, the whole league was cancelled for a year in 2020. It's very similar to a lot of amateur sports. In 2021, where they had basically an unseeded year, so it was any teams who were local to each other, no matter the level of quality. So it was a little bit of a mismatch at times. We were playing some teams who were in Division 2 or, were at the lower levels of the sport. But it was good to get back on the field, and it's great, to be honest, it's been great since then that we've recovered really well, and we still get the same people turning out that we always had before COVID hit. They've all come back, and it's great to see everyone here, really.
So I'm Michael Johnson, and I'm a receiver for Cambridge Cats. Yeah, it's great, because usually the trend is you go up and you might get bounced back down, how it is, but we managed to hold it down last season. by not getting demoted, and this season we're still here and we've progressed as a team, climbing the division compared to last year, so it's looking good.
One of the things that might strike you if you don't know American football very well as a spectator is you come onto the pitch here at Cullum's Common, you see a lot of people, there's a lot of people in this squad. So talk to me about the camaraderie then and the build-up of the team, and just how well do you think you've gelled in the sort of time you've been playing together?
It's good, man. Like, it's different to any other any sport that I've played before. I played British football, I've played basketball before, and it's all a lot less people, easier to integrate, but considering how many people we have in the squad, we do well. We've got a real culture around this team in Cambridge.
And you've got quite a makeup as well. You've got people who've or sort of military people who have played at university level, and people who have actually sort of converted almost, or sort of like, you know, to come from another sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, we do well to integrate these people. Like in the east of England, there are a few military bases, so we get a lot of guys that haven't played football from when they were kids back in the States and come back and they want to play. You get people who've gone to university. I went to university in Norwich and I came back home to Cambridge and I played here. So, you know, a lot of familiar faces and we do it quite well.
I'm Harry Jack Mann and I play defensive back for Cambridge Bearcats, anywhere from corner, safety, a little bit of star sometimes. Move around a little bit.
This is a question that I put to MJ and Coach Andy, and it's about the team spirit really, because if you don't follow American football and you come to watch a game for the first time today, you'll see a lot of people in kits, so you naturally think, wow, there's a lot of you. What is that team spirit actually like?
I played a bunch of other team sports before I came to American football, and yeah, when you turn up and you see such a huge team, you're like, oh my god, this is so many people to get to know. Like, you don't necessarily understand how that connection is going to be there, but actually I think this sport is the best example of team spirit that I've ever been a part of, partly because of what's on the field. I haven't played any other sport where you rely on the man next to you quite as much as you do here. Like, you know, you've got to have real trust in your guys out there when the bullets are flying, and that brings everybody together. And then also, like, you break down into position groups, into offense and defense. There's lots of sub teams, but then so you've got like that smaller dynamic of like the guys that you play right alongside that you're a little closer to, but then you come together and you have that whole team dynamic as well. It's rare in life that you get to be a part of so many people working so clearly towards one common goal. Don't know about you, but I don't work in a team of 60 odd at the office, so it's a unique and interesting thing, and it's part of the game that I really, really enjoy.
In terms of last season then, you got promoted and you're in a new division last season. You managed to stay in it.
Yeah, wonderful. When you come up to the Prem, the first thing that you want to be achieving as a team, our goal for last season is just stay in the Prem. You know, we're coming up to the top level in the UK, and we want to show that we can, you know, it wasn't a fluke that we are at this level and that we can stay and move forward. So really, like, getting your hooks in and getting that. You don't want to be a team that comes up and goes straight back down. Getting your hooks into the Prem and being like, no, we're here to stay is a fantastic thing for the team in terms of attitude amongst the people that are already here, and also like the growth of the team in, you know, the wider area. So it was really important for us that we got to stick around last year and we put a shift in and showed that we are here to stay. That's led to some more recruitment this year, as well as, like, you know, like I said, you get that morale boost from being like, no, we are here, we can do this. And it's just onwards and upwards. We want to show that we are a Premiership institution and we want to push this into challenging for national titles at some point.
Because obviously the recruitment this year is something very interesting that MJ and Coach Andy have talked about already. In fact, you've got quite a broad range of players, a lot of different backgrounds, quite a sort of, you know, in the sense that you've got people who are from the military bases, you've got people who play for university, and even people who've sort of swapped sports almost as well.
Yeah, again, this is a unique thing about this sport. I think it's the broadest church that I've ever been a part of in terms of sports that I've played throughout my life. That seems to be true largely everywhere you go. Played on a couple of different teams, and that tends to be true across the board. But yeah, like you said, here we've got just a real collection of different people. We're sort of geographically, we're obviously in between a few air bases, so we get some Americans coming along looking to relive their high school glory days, which is fun. You got people like me, who's born in Essex, moved to London, came here for work, and then suddenly I'm here. You've got people that lived and grew up here and played with the youth team when that was a thing years ago. You've got people that have come to the unis from all corners of the globe. Like, Cambridge itself is a very multicultural place and it attracts a real wide range of people, and I think we're just a reflection of that.
This is a question I put to MJ and Coach Andy as well about the COVID pandemic. There was a time when sports were cancelled. If you could play, you had to play effectively behind closed doors, even outside in a setting like this as well, really. Couldn't have spectators. There were very, very severe restrictions, as we all remember, really. Just how much of a difference has it made coming out of the pandemic and actually being able to have fans back at Cullum's Common for the games?
Yeah, it's huge. So I was still in London at the time, actually, when COVID was a thing. I hadn't made my way to the Cats yet, but with sort of even less space and large outdoor facilities like you'll find here in central London, actually the sport for me got cancelled completely, and I almost didn't realise how big a part of my life it was and what the sport did for me until I'd lost it. So just the ability to be out here on a day like today playing the game is something I'm really, really grateful for. In regards to having fans and spectators, anyone that's been to any sporting event ever knows that, you know, whether it's one people, five people, 5,000 people, when you hear people get behind you and you hear those cheers as something happens on the field, it's a feeling unlike anything else. So, yeah, it's wonderful to have people here watching, growing our little sport in the UK. And, yeah, it's just a great feeling.
And we should also say a big congratulations to Michael Johnson, or MJ as he's affectionately known, for making the Great Britain squad. Well done, Michael.
You're listening to Cambridge Sports Special on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Friday evenings on Cambridge 105 Radio, Amy Gray takes us from the 1990s and into the 2000s.
From classic hits to forgotten gems, dance floor bangers to alternative anthems, there'll be games, chat and nostalgia, as well as something a bit different from the musical Lucky Dip, as we celebrate these fantastic decades.
Amy Gray, Fridays at 6 on Cambridge 105 Radio. Listen again at cambridge105.co.uk.
Your money, don't need your time, don't need your freedom, cause I got mine. Don't need your kisses, don't need your hugs, you keep your message, don't need your love. You need and don't look back. It must be easy to walk away when you don't believe the things you say. Ooh, life's unkind, that's why I had to break the chain. I don't sing in the dead of night, I don't bleed from the cut you make.
You're listening to Cambridge 105 Radio, and this is Cambridge Sports Special. On the football theme, we're talking about Sharpshooters FC. It's an under-7s to under-14s young football team in Cambridge with over 100 kids registered. They're very much about developing young players, dealing with building mentality and character, and we're going to talk to them about their plans for the future, and perhaps as an opportunity as well for young people, kids and parents to get involved as well. With a bit of luck, we should hopefully have Daniel Ike, their coach, on the line. So, Daniel, are you there?
Hello.
Hello, Daniel. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good stuff. Brilliant. Well, thank you for joining us today, Daniel.
Yeah, I've got... thank you for calling us here. I've got Gilbert Mensah with me here as well.
Oh, brilliant. Daniel and Gilbert. So, good afternoon, Daniel. Good afternoon, Gilbert.
Yeah, good afternoon, Daniel and Gilbert. How are you?
Very, very, very well, thank you.
Good,
very well.
Good. Thank you for joining us today. I know you've been busy, as usual, running around. But we just wanted to get you on just to obviously discuss Sharpshooters. And the first question is, what is Sharpshooters, if you can explain it to the audience?
Yes, Sharpshooters is a community football club based in Albury area.
Okay.
The name Sharpshooters is mainly to motivate kids to play, to be sharp in the pitch.
Okay.
That's where the name comes from. And when I played back home in Nigeria, that was my team name as well.
Okay.
And it helped a lot of kids to be very, very active and motivated. And,
fantastic.
You know, when we started this Sharpshooters here, like organizing kids here, when we thought about the name, that name came into my head. And I told Gilbert straight away, and he was like, wow, that's good, great name. Mm-hmm. And that's how the whole thing clicked in. And all our kids have, when you ask them how they want to be in the pitch, they want to be sharp in the pitch. So it kind of like, that connects to the name of the club.
Fantastic. And how did it all start? How did you and Gilbert get together to put this together?
Yeah. It all started during the COVID period when kids were at home doing nothing, and you know, we all stuck at home with kids, and kind of like, what can we do to help, you know, these kids and, you know, add extra things into their life. So we started going to the park, playing around with the kids, and then from there, parents were kind of like, who wants their kids to be outside as well? You know, walking past and asking, oh, can their kids play? So we kind of like, yeah, it's for everyone, all the kids around the area. And we started every week in, week out, I started growing. And within 1 month, we had like 20 kids. So we're like, no, we're not going to tell the kids bye-bye now. We have to form a club, you know. So that's how the whole thing, we sat down together, had a meeting, and we like, we have to, you know, do something to create something good in the community for kids. So we reached out to Cambridge FA, asked them how to register a club. And so we made all the inquiries and they sent us all the information. We went through the affiliation process and all that. Then registered the league last year. And okay. Yeah, that's how the whole thing started. And it's been growing and growing now. We actually, you know, desperate for people to come and help because we can't do it alone.
Oh, okay. So you're currently looking for volunteers?
Yes, definitely.
Fantastic. We'll get on to that at the end. Just roughly, how many young kids are registered at the moment?
Registered kids on our system, we have 88 registered kids.
Oh, wow.
On our system, yeah. But we have more than... You know, we have other kids that are not registered as well.
Okay.
So we currently have about 105 kids in total.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah.
And you talked, just very quickly, you talked briefly about building mentality and character. Can you just quickly, I think Gilbert mentioned this, if you could just come in and tell us what you're looking to do in regards to that.
Yeah, building mentality and character. Yeah, I don't want to do the whole talking myself. I'll have to pass the phone to Gilbert as well so he can share some of the information
okay.
We have as well. Okay? Yeah, hold on.
Yeah, on building character, one of the things that we look at is physical and mental health. And the concept is, how do you, when mental is down, rely on your body to pick up your mental state?
Mm-hmm.
So we tend to try and find a balance between physical activity and also mental strength.
Mm-hmm.
So through sports, we're using sort of consistency and discipline to drive mental activity. So when we tend to find kids when they're entering sort of the 11, 12, 13 age, and sort of hormones kick in, there's an imbalance mentally. And the idea is we use physical activity to help them promote a good mindset.
Okay.
And then when your physical's down, and imagine towards the end of the match and, you know, your body's trying to give up, use your mind to then drive to the outcome that you want.
Okay.
And hopefully that then provides a foundation for their future as well.
Okay, that's great. In terms of the future, what are your plans for the future? Obviously, you said you're looking for volunteers, but what are your main plans for the future?
Our aspiration really is to have almost two parts of the club. One, which is developing what we call kids that can achieve professional and academy status in football.
Mm-hmm.
The other half is really supporting community and continuing that community work. So the help that we need is really on twofold. One is more around the football training and developing football activity.
Okay.
And I'm getting people who have either played football or have an interest in football, who have an experience playing it, support us with training kits. And then the other is more community work. So how do we support the parents who currently don't have much money, but they want the best for their children?
Okay.
And that becomes more around sort of, you know, social help, allowing parents to know what's available to them in the society as well. So it's that twofold. And in a way, the way we structured the club this season is that we're going to have coaches, but also parental liaisons.
Okay.
Those parental roles are actually not only to support on-field activity, but also off-field activities as well.
Fantastic. And just lastly, because, sorry, we're just short on time, how can people find you and join?
So we've got a Facebook page, Sharpshooters Cambridge FC. And also we've got Sharpshooters FC at gmail.com.
Fantastic. And are you also online? Like, is there a website they can go to?
Yes, we do. We do, which is under development. So sharpshootersfc.org.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Okay, thank you very much for your time today. And hopefully we'll look to get you back on the show to discuss this more in the future. But yeah, thank you very much, both.
Super. Thank you. Thank you.
Take care.
And Mex, very quickly as well, we've got to talk about some boxing. There's a fight on the horizon in September that you wanted to touch on before we go.
Oh, yeah, just very quickly. So obviously, boxing is in a good state thanks to Saudi Arabian boxing takeover, or Saudi Turkey Alashik. Very influential. We've had Tyson Fury, Usyk. There is a rematch of that fight on the 21st of December in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. But the big one is boxing is back in the UK on the 21st of September. And the jewel of the crown, Anthony Joshua, will be facing Daniel Dubois in an all-British showdown for the IBF world title, world heavyweight title. And it's a great fight card. There's no love lost between them, if you've seen what's been going on social media. Daniel Dubois, Anthony Joshua. Also on the card, we've got Joshua Buati and Willie Hutchinson, Liam Smith v Josh Kelly. So yeah, it's a great, great fight. So yeah.
Busy calendar of boxing and, of course, other sports as well. That's all we've got time for today. You've been listening to Cambridge Sports Special with me, Daniel, and Amika as well. And we're back on your airwaves very soon on Cambridge 105 Radio. Take care.
Take care. Bye for now. Bye.
always thinking this won't last. No one else can hold us back. They say, listen, Romney. They say, listen, Jesse.